three wise men. To celebrate the birth of Jesus in solely materialistic ways is a desecration of the meaning of his holy life and of the immortal message of divine love and God union that he preached. Seeing in the West the shallow, often irreverent observance given to the birth anniversary of this great avatar, I inaugurated in Self-Realization Fellowship the spiritual celebration of Christmas before Christmas Day festivities by devoting a day-long meditation service to the worship of Christ. The ideal is to honor Christ in spirit and meditation from morning till evening, absorbed in feeling in one's own consciousness the infinite Christ which was born in Jesus. That experience is one of profound peace and joy, more than a human heart has ever known, expanding into an all-embracing consciousness. Often has the form of Jesus appeared before me during these services, such love in those eyes. It is my prayer and my conviction that it will come to pass, that comparable observances of the real meaning of Christmas will become a tradition throughout the world. This idea of the Christ consciousness was something that was new to me when I first met Mother. I had heard, of course, of Jesus Christ and of the incarnation of Jesus. But Yogananda, through his uplifted consciousness and through his perception of one of the tradition of the East, came to know that this Christ consciousness is something that is universal. It's embedded within the early Christian teachings, if we would but have eyes to see it. That the Christ is the firstborn of every creature, said St. Paul. And if we really take that literally, if we look to the heart of it, we would see that this Christ consciousness is something that is all-pervasive, if it is the firstborn of every creature. It is embedded within every atom of space. So what is it that this Christ consciousness symbolizes? It is the pure divine consciousness that has permeated all creation, that God the Father represents pure spirit without any form, without any beginning or any end. And then, through the creative power of that divine consciousness, came out all creation. And through that creation manifested all the different forms that we see before us. All the varieties, the vast variety that we see in this universe, all the fields of separation, separating this atom from that atom, this molecule from that molecule, this planet from that planet, and so on. And so there are fields of separation, and there are also fields of attraction. Because as atoms cluster together, and then molecules come together, they all form the materiality of everything that we see. But physical scientists will tell us that behind all of what appears to be solid and material is actually all energy. And behind that energy, we have to say that there's an intelligence, because one atom knows how to form itself in a particular way, and those molecules know how to form themselves in particular ways, so that one thing becomes a table, another thing a couch, another thing a wall, another thing a tree, and so on. So that there is energy and there is intelligence. Now in India, this is called prana. Prana. And so everything that goes on in this universe goes according to that law of physical reality through that prana. That life energy. And so that when you eat your food, you digest it. Unbeknownst to your own self, how that digestion happens is a bit of a mystery. And your heart beats all through the day. And thoughts flow into your brain. And all of this happens quite spontaneously, automatically in most cases. And it's a fantastic creation when we look at it. And we see all the variety, all of the beauty, all of the harmony, all the different ways these things work together. But when we go deeper, as the mystics have, as the yogis did, as the early Christian mystics, as the early Judaic mystics, as the Sufis within Muslim, as you go deeper, you see that there is something even more profound, more important, behind the ordinary, what we might say, intelligence of nature, or what is called Prakriti, Mother Nature. And so all of nature is Divine Mother, and it's all an expression of perfection, of that pure spirit. And within that expression of spirit is embedded that Christ consciousness, or the only begotten Son of God. Now, this does not refer to an individual who was born 2,000 years ago only. It is that firstborn of every creature. It is what is embedded within all Mother Nature. And within the womb of Mother Nature comes this Christ Spirit. And it is a perfect reflection of God the Father, or that unlimited, formless, beginningless, endless Spirit that was in the beginning. And so through introspection, through learning to turn the mind within and the consciousness within, we begin to perceive that Christ consciousness within all creation, first within yourself, and then throughout all creation. In my own journey in this realm, I remember going to Mother at one point, and I said, "Mother, I can feel God so strongly within myself, but I don't see Him outside. I get around crowds of people, I get in different circumstances, and I don't feel it in the same way." And she said, "First you find God within you, and then your vision is purified and you see Him everywhere about you." And what she said, of course, was absolutely true. So through further development then, after finding that Christ light, that Christ spirit within you, then you begin to see Him everywhere about you. When we are sitting in meditation, I was sitting with my eyes closed, as my eyes are closed now. And when I speak, my eyes are usually closed, and my whole attention as the point between the eyebrows. And I feel there a powerful vibration, a powerful light. And as I sat in meditation, I saw this beautiful five-pointed star, even as I see it now. This five-pointed star that is spoken about, that the wise men were following, and that the shepherds were inspired by, and all people sat in awe of, happens right within your own being. When you still the mind, and you bring yourself into that state of stillness, and all the world is in a state of hush, you turn your attention there at the point of the between the eyebrows. That is the ajna, what in yoga is called the kutastha chaitanya. That is the Christ consciousness. And at first, it is a night. At first, you see only darkness, only blackness. But then, as you learn to steady your mind and steady your gaze, you see there that beautiful, beautiful five-pointed star emanating. Now, the 5 points represents the 5 different aspects of creation. There are so many ways that 5 is reflective of human consciousness. We have the 5 senses. When we stand with our legs apart and our arms outstretched and our head stretched up, we are in the shape of a 5-pointed star in the human body. We have 5 representing the 5 different chakras, lower than the Christ consciousness, which transcends the human consciousness. And so this number 5 is very important when it comes to the symbol of man. And as we rise up in consciousness, we see these things. We see the spine behind us lit up like a Christmas tree with all of these different lights. And this Christmas tree is representative of all the different life energies that are within us. And so this symbology that we think about at this time of year is really something tremendous. It is like a blueprint of what it is for an individual to go from the human to the divine. And when you really put your feet upon this path, when you really apply yourself to going inwardly, all of these things begin to open themselves up for you. And so most of the world sees this in the outer sense. They think of a man who was born 2,000 years ago. Now, this is still a tremendous thing to meditate on. And I will continue here with what Master has to say. The message of the heavenly host to the shepherds in the countryside of Bethlehem was, "On earth, peace, goodwill toward men." Peace in the world starts with peace in individual hearts. The peace of God, which passeth all understanding, is the peace Jesus came to bring to man. It is the only sure foundation for world amity. It is found in the interiorized state of one's God communion in meditation. Then, like an ever-full reservoir, it pours out freely to one's family, friends, community, nation, and the world. If everyone lived the ideals exemplified in the life of Jesus, having made those qualities a part of their own selves through meditation, a millennium of peace and brotherhood would come on earth. A person who is imbued with God's peace can feel naught but goodwill toward all. The crib of ordinary consciousness is very small, filled to capacity with self-love. The cradle of goodwill of Christ-love holds the infinite consciousness that includes all beings, all nations, all races, and faiths as one. My own teacher, my own guru, Mother Hamilton, said she learned more about Christianity from this Hindu master than she was taught in all the years of her own Catholic upbringing. And here we are come face to face with a universal message that real Christ love is not secularized. It is not localized to a particular church, that my church is right and all others are wrong. It is a universal love. It is a love for all humankind. It is a love for all creation and all creatures within it. Think of Jesus talking about the lilies of the field and how Solomon in all of his glory was not arrayed as one of these. Think of his consciousness as he spoke about this, and that the beauty, the upliftment of spirit he must have experienced looking out over those field of lilies. How beautiful, how wonderful is his relationship with all of creation. That love, when it comes into your heart, is not a sentimentality. It is an act of spirit that comes in, and it is universal. It opens your heart. You feel love not just for those who love you, not just for those who do you some kind of favor, but you feel love for all creation, everywhere, equally present. It does not distinguish between high or low, in or out. It is the universal love. And just think, if all creation, all mankind, operated by that law of love, to do as unto others as you would be done unto. Just think how this world would change. Just think of the useless laws that could be dropped from the books. Just think of the prisons that could be emptied out. Just think of the prosperity that could occur. People loving each other, giving towards each other, peaceful towards each other, with each other's interest in mind as they act. What a fantastical world this could become. It could become an Eden, a heaven on earth. Now, this is just not vain imagination or wishful thinking. There are actually times in the world cycle that the world has experienced this already in the past. It is called the Golden Age, or the Satya Yuga. And during these times, there is a greater harmony that comes about with this universal truth. It's not that everyone lives it equally, but there are many, many within the world that are striving towards it, and many who have accomplished it. But we have just gone through a very dark period. It is called the Kali Yuga, the Age of Darkness. And our own historians call it the Dark Ages. And it is a time when laws and nations of laws practically disappeared from the earth. It was a time when very few people were educated, knew how to read or write, that warfare was so rampant upon this earth. Now, we were just coming out of that period into what is called the Dwapara, or the Electrical Age. And that this is a great time of awakening, but it is also a time when we are still infused with much of that darkness from the past. So we still see, when we look around us, that there is warfare, that there are differences, there are clashes, there are people who are not living according to this higher law, this higher Dharma. But when we attune ourselves to it individually, we become like a light upon a hilltop, and we begin to beckon others to also live according to that higher light. There are so many who look outside of themselves. Well, if Jesus Christ returns again, or if the 12th Iman comes, if you're Muslim, or if you're of a certain bent of mind, perhaps people will come from other planets, and they'll come and they'll straighten out this planet. They'll straighten people out. They'll destroy the wrongdoers, and they'll reward the good people. And it's always from the outside somehow, you see. And this is not how change happens. Change happens most powerfully and most convincingly when you change yourself. And when you have the courage and the willingness to change yourself, as Yogananda used to say, if you change yourself, you will change thousands. You will change those who are around you. You will change those for generations to come when you really attune yourself to this divine light within yourself, this Christ consciousness. To continue with Yogananda, legends abound concerning the worship of the infant Jesus by the wise men from the East. A common tradition is that they were magi, Hebrew charaminim, Greek magoi, a priestly class of mystics among ancient Medes and Persians, credited with esoteric powers and knowledge by which they were able to interpret hidden meanings in the scriptures and to read secrets of the past and divine the future. The Roman Church honored the wise men with the title of kings, based on Psalm 72:10. Relevant to the future coming of the Messiah, the kings of Tarshish of all the isles shall bring presents. The kings of Sheba and Saba shall offer gifts. The kings are sainted by the Church and identified as Gaspar, Melchor, and Balthasar. Relics of these kings are enshrined at Cologne. The wise men are presumed to be three in number, commensurate with the New Testament account of the offerings of three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. The adoration of the wise men is far more significant than merely another scene of pageantry recognizing the holy birth. It was the defining stamp of God placed on the life of Jesus that would in future characterize his mission and message. A reminder that Jesus was born in the Orient, an Oriental Christ, and his teachings bore the influence of the Eastern culture and customs. There's a very strong tradition in India, authoritatively known amongst Thai metaphysicians, in tales well told and written in ancient manuscripts, that the wise men of the East made their way to the infant Jesus in Bethlehem were in fact great sages of India. Not only did the Indian masters come to Jesus, but he reciprocated their visit. During the unaccounted 4 years of Jesus' life, the scriptures remain silent about him from approximately ages 14 to 30. He journeyed to India, probably traveling the well-established trade route that linked the Mediterranean with China and India. His own God realization, reawakened and reinforced in the company of the masters and the spiritual environs of India, provided a background of the universality of truth from which he could preach a simple, open message, comprehensible to the masses of his native country, yet with underlying meanings that would be appreciated in generations to come as the infancy of man's mind would mature in understanding. As civilization takes giant strides in the proliferation of material knowledge, man will find that the underpinnings of many of his old, familiar religious dogmas may well begin to crack and crumble. What is needed is a reunion of the science of religion with the spirit, or inspiration of religion, the esoteric with the exoteric. The yoga science taught by Lord Krishna, which provides practical methods for actual inner experience of God to supplant the feeble life expectancy of beliefs, and the spirit of Christ's love and brotherhood preached by Jesus, the only sure panacea to prevent the world from tearing itself apart by its unyielding differences, are in tandem one and the same universal truth, taught by the two Christs of East and West, only with the variant outward emphasis according to the time and conditions of their respective incarnations. So this universal truth has been taught in all parts of the world. There have been these Christs or these avatars. An avatar means descent of spirit into flesh. And these are special incarnations. Most of us come into this world with some karmic debt to this world. Karma is the law of cause and effect. As you sow, so shall you reap. And as you project out from yourself, you always get this boomerang force that comes back to you, depending on what you projected out. And so most people are living in the throes of these karmas, of both positive and negative, as they're coming back to us, and then what we choose to create anew with this very day. And so back and forth it goes, and we get higher and then we get lower. We start to make progress and then we step backwards. And when we really put our feet upon the path, then we encounter all of those things that we have done in our outward journey from God. But we can be rest assured that there is an inner Savior within us. There is Christ consciousness, or Krishna consciousness, right within you. That perfection, that purity, that love is already dwelling in your heart and in your consciousness. And when it is reawakened, it is that Savior consciousness that lifts you beyond the human limitations and confines. Things that seem so enduring in this moment, things you have tried to change but refuse to budge. When you contact that inner purity and power of Christ consciousness, it can heal you of all the past woes and problems that you yourself have created. And this is a fantastic thing when you think about it. It is the good news. That's what the gospel means, is good news. That divine consciousness exists right within you. And when you still the body and the mind and listen to that still small voice within you, awakening that inner Christ consciousness, you go on a tremendous journey. A tremendous journey. And so this is the deeper meaning, the inner meaning. What Master has been talking about here is mostly the historical meaning. But there is this inner meaning that he also refers to. And reading from Mother Hamilton, there are the Cross and Lotus journals that are out in front out here. And they are for you to take. And this is the Christ seed. Now, last Sunday, we celebrated the birth of the Christ. This is the eternal seed of spirit, which is planted in every form of flesh that walks the earth. But the seed which is planted in the human sense, and so man was born with a human consciousness. But he was born but for one purpose, and that is to find Christ within himself. You see, this whole world is Christ. It is the only begotten Son of God, because when God and nature form this union, this marriage, then nature, representing the flesh, and spirit, which inhabits that form of flesh, took being upon earth, and all that you see around you is an expression of that one life, the sonship, that sonship of God the Father and God the Mother as nature. There is no place where you can look where you do not see the Christ. But now that Christmas is gone, we forget all about it again until next year. We don't think of this as a time of beginning, but we think of it as Christmas having ended. The birth of Christ now is celebrated, and so Christmas is over. Another year is over, and we don't think that this is just but the beginning of that Christ seed, that Christ life which has sprouted and which has been born within us. And this even goes into your own physical being. What Mother realized through inner revelation is that the pineal and the pituitary gland are symbolized by Joseph and Mary. And these two glands have a secretion. And through the secretion of these two glands, and because these two glands don't physically come together, this is considered a virginal birth. And through these secretions and the formation of this seed, the seed travels down the ganglionic nervous system and goes into a conical-like cave right behind your stomach. Now, Bethlehem means house of bread. And when in deep meditation you see this five-pointed star overhead in your ajna, your third eye point, that seed is deposited there. And all the animal nature bows itself at the feet of this Christ nature within you. And so all the animals are there, but they're passive. And that is, all your animal forces within you are now at peace. And through the revelation that comes within the heavens, or the higher consciousness, comes this peace on earth, goodwill toward all men. You have this feeling of expanded consciousness and expanded love in that moment. And you know something special is going on. And in Mother's own case, she even felt herself to be pregnant at that time when there was the birth of this inner Christ within her. And so goes the story. Then Herod, which represents all the passions in you, seeks to cut the heads of off all the children. And this is the passion seek to expel through sexual energy that Christ seed and all everything that it contains within it. So for that particular experience, you withhold from having sexual expression during that time. And the Christ seed travels to the base of the spine, to Egypt. And then eventually, when Herod dies, the passions die back, then the seed begins to go through Galilee, or the circuit, which is what that means. And it comes up through the spine and through each one of the chakras, and it gathers there its disciples. Now you have six chakras, including the Christ chakra, and each one of them has a duality to it, a polarity between a positive and a negative. And so each one of these disciples represents an aspect of each one of these chakras. So 6 times 2 is 12. So you have these 12 plus the 13th is the Christ, which has no polarity, which has no duality. And so it makes its way up through the spine. And when you get to the 4th chakra, this is the time when you go through what is called the mystical crucifixion. And if you stand with your feet together and your arms outstretched, you're in the form of a cross. And this ascendancy coming up through the spine meets the horizontal force of worldly nature. And so it's at the heart center, which is the first center where you become transcendent to purely selfish, body-centered concerns. And so it's through there that that purification happens and the mystical crucifixion starts. And there's 3 days or 3 separate aspects to the mystical crucifixion, in the heart and in the throat and then in the ajna. until you completely transcend and ascend to God the Father, or Spirit beyond all form, all time and space. And you go into that pure and absolute perfection of oneness with God. Now, isn't this fantastic that this is what's being spoken about in these scriptural stories? And so when we really take it in and we see what it means, we are very much in awe of all of this. Continuing with Mother, when you attain this, the realization of your oneness with God, you are filled with the feeling of carrying the Christ child within yourself. And it is, as I said last Sunday, an actual physical experience which you will feel within your own being. Then that is only the first step. It is like the child who is born from the mother's body. When it comes in, it is in a helpless state. It must learn. In the first place, it must be fed. It must be clothed. It must be changed. It must be taken care of in every detail because it is not able to take care of itself. It is the expression of the infinite come in human form. But it must be taught how to walk, how to speak, how to live. And the tragedy of it is, in the human sense, that we teach it all to the things of the world. We teach it selfishness. We teach it to think only of the ego. Watch out that you don't hurt yourself. Be sure that you put your mittens on and your coat on. Now you must not step over there. All of these things you must do for the protection of your human self, which of course is true, because in a spiritual sense, the same thing is true. Because we tell our children that they must always keep company with good people, that they must try to obey the laws of God, that they must treat others as they would like to be treated. All of these things come into being. But the beginning, the birth date of this child which is born within you, the glorious one, the Son of God, the consciousness of who and what you really are, just begins at this birth of Christmas. And then it expands and expresses itself. And so the new year is not the end of Christmas. It is the beginning. It is the beginning from there. You go on and you nurture that Christ child within yourself. And you see, you have the memory of all the things in the human within yourself, the experiences which you have gone through as a human being in human consciousness. And these habit patterns of thought, of speech, of action are very deeply embedded in your consciousness. They are not gotten rid of easily. That is why Jesus said that a prophet is without honor in his own country, because such a one is going through these experiences still. After the experiences, maintains the same form. They still eat. They still sleep. They use all of the senses. And they wear perhaps the same clothes. The same personality manifests itself. The same habit formations. But they do not realize that what has happened inside, that form is totally and completely different. Because the price has been paid for that difference. That where before everything was in the ego, the human ego consciousness, now the divine spark has been lit, and the taper, that flame within, has to grow and spread until it becomes a conflagration, and it absorbs the whole consciousness, the whole being, the whole body, the whole life. So you see, this all happens right within you, and you can honor the birth of the Christ best. As Yogananda said, by taking some time, not forgoing all of the festivities of the time, but to be sure to take that time to go within. You know, the yogis discovered that there are four times of the day that are especially beneficial for meditation: early morning, and then just before noon, before 11 to 12, and then eventide, around 5 to 6, and then later at night, between 10 and 12. And if we would still the mind during these times, we get particular benefit from that. And in the same way, there are the four times of the year, the two equinoxes and the two solstices. And this winter solstice is particularly powerful because it is a time that symbolically we rest, we go within. There is less light outside. There is less activity. And so we dive deep. And we join with those divine emanations that are coming out to you now. There is a particular grace at this time of year that if you would really focus your mind and internalize it, you will get great, great benefit from diving deep into that stillness within your own being until you too see that star emanating within your own being, until that birth of the Christ comes right within you. And what do you get in return? Then you get eternal peace, 1,000 years of peace. And there are the 1,000-petal lotus, that is, the brain unfolding in 1,000 petals, as it were, into the realization of that divine life. And so that 1,000 years of peace and that 1,000-petal lotus are the same thing, you see. It is the divine consciousness within you awakening. And so you get that bliss, you get that light, you get that peace. You get that absolute knowledge beyond any question of a doubt that you are one with that divine consciousness and that divine life. And you become free, free from the karmic bonds that ensnare you now, that keep you in ignorance and keep you in separation. And so when you achieve that freedom, you are now totally free. You can stay or you can go. But if you stay, you are then a helper to this world in order to help it to evolve to its completion and to its fulfillment of finding that divine light. Because everything has come from God and everything returns to God. And so every person, every creature, every aspect of creation will eventually find its route back to its divine origin and source. And it will all have been on a tremendous adventure, a tremendous adventure. And now the soul will be merged into the almighty divine soul, and it will see that in truth and in reality, it was never really separate. It was just an illusion of the mind that felt that it was separate. Now, when you feel yourself to be separate, it is a very real feeling experience. And there are some people who experience a tremendous sense of sadness in their life. They have tremendous times of depression, but in many cases, this is not an ordinary emotional state. It is because they are deeply, deeply missing their divine home. And when they realize that, then they can be given the means in order to come to that state where they reunite themselves with what they've been longing for so deeply and so longingly. So whether we are being pulled by a positive pull of divine love or we are seeking to escape the deep darkness that we feel because of our separation, let us march with strong steps towards the divine goal. Let nothing dissuade you. Let no one else's opinion move you to the left or to the right. Let no desire, nature, or fear within you stop you until you achieve that absolute and total consummation in spirit. This is your destiny, and it is what you have come to do. So let us ever reside in that spirit of love and truth and spirit. There were two things that I wanted when I set out on this path, driven by an inner need, an unspoken something that I couldn't even put a name to. But I wanted bliss because I wanted relief from the existential pain that I felt. And I wanted to know the truth. I didn't want to just learn a philosophy. I didn't want to just be filled with some fairy tales. I wanted to know the truth. And I can tell you from my own experience that it is attainable, that you too may also know this truth and feel this bliss. And that you too may become free. It is the tremendous destiny of each one of you. So let us make that determination deep within us. And let us set our course straight. And do not falter. And do not be deviated. But go straight to your divine goal. Let us sit for a few minutes. And when you look for the divine within yourself, it does not need to come through some tremendous experience. It can be, but it can also come in a very gentle, very subtle kind of form. So when you look within, particularly within your heart center and within your soul, feel for there any sense of divine connection, any sense of peace, any sense of the divine presence, and don't judge it. Mother once said that when she stood upon this earth with her 2 feet, she was connected with all of the earth. Now you think of the great mass of the earth and compare it to the size of 2 feet. And 2 feet aren't very much, are they? And yet they connected her to the entire earth. And in the same way, when you feel the divine presence, it may feel just like a slender thread of connection. And yet through that slender thread of connection, you are connected with all of that which we call God. Divine consciousness, God the Father. And so look for that presence, put your mind upon it, and allow it to guide you back to its origins and bring you more deeply into the state of divine communion. But don't judge it, don't worry about it. Just focus your mind on whatever form it comes in. Pray with me, O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
And surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection
surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He. That light ever be born anew in your spirit, in your heart, in your soul. And may you carry that light out as a lamp unto this world until all the world is filled with lamps of the divine light, and that we may usher this world into a new age, an age of divine realization, an age in which all individuals will radiate that pure light, and there will be in truth and indeed peace on earth, goodwill toward all men.